Chapter 23, The Testing. Nynaeve warily eyed the huge chamber far beneath the White Tower and eyed Shiriam at her side just as warily. The mistress of novices seemed expectant, perhaps even a little impatient. In her few days in Tar Valon, Nynaeve had seen only serenity in the Aes Sedai and a smiling acceptance of events coming in their own time. The domed room had been carved out of the bedrock of the island. The light of lamps on tall stands reflected from pale, smooth stone walls. Centered under the dome was a thing made of three rounded silver arches, each just tall enough to walk under, sitting on a thick silver ring with their ends touching each other. Arches and ring were all of one piece. She could not see what lay inside. There the light flickered oddly and made her stomach flutter with it if she looked too long. Where arch touched ring, an Aes Sedai sat cross-legged on the bare stone of the floor, staring at the silvery construction. Another stood nearby, beside a plain table on which sat three large silver chalices. Each, Nynaeve knew, or at least she had been told, was filled with clear water. All four Aes Sedai wore their shawls, as Shiriam did. Blue-fringed for Shiriam, red for the swarthy woman by the table, green, white, and gray for the three around the arches. Nynaeve still wore one of the dresses she had been given in Faldara, pale green embroidered with small white flowers. "First you leave me to stare at my thumbs from morning to night," Nynaeve muttered, "and now it's all in a rush." "The hour waits on no woman," Shiriam replied. "The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, and when it wills. Patience is a virtue that must be learned, but we must all be ready for the change of an instant." Nynaeve tried not to glare. The most irritating thing she had yet discovered about the flame-haired Aes Sedai was that she sometimes sounded as if she were quoting sayings even when she was not. "What is that thing?"
"A Tur-Angreal."
"Well, that tells me nothing. What does it do?"
"Tur-Angreal do many things, child. Like Angreal and Sa-Angreal, they are remnants of the Age of Legends that use the one power, though they are not quite so rare as the other two. While some Tur-Angreal must be made to work by Aes Sedai, as this one must, others will do what they do simply with the presence of any woman who can channel. There are even supposed to be some that will function for anyone at all. Unlike Angreal and Sa-Angreal, they were made to do specific things. One other we have in the tower makes oaths binding. When you are raised to full sisterhood, you will take your final vows, holding that Tur-Angreal, to speak no word that is not true, to make no weapon for one man to kill another, never to use the one power as a weapon except against dark friends or shadow spawn, or in the last extreme of defending your own life, that of your warder, or that of another sister." Nynaeve shook her head. It sounded either like too much to swear or too little, and she said so. "Once Aes Sedai were not required to swear oaths. It was known what Aes Sedai were and what they stood for, and there was no need for more. Many of us wish it were so still. But the wheel turns and the times change. That we swear these oaths, that we are known to be bound, allows the nations to deal with us without fearing that we will throw up our own power, the one power, against them. Between the Trolloc Wars and the War of the Hundred Years, we made these choices, and because of them the White Tower still stands, and we can still do what we can against the Shadow." Shiriam drew a deep breath. "Light, child. I am trying to teach you what any other woman standing where you are would have learned over the course of years. It cannot be done. Tur-Angreal are what must concern you now. We don't know why they were made. We dare use only a handful of them, and the ways in which we do dare to use them may be nothing like the purposes the makers intended. Most we have learned to our cost to avoid. Over the years, no few Aes Sedai have been killed, or had their talent burned out of them, learning that." Nynaeve shivered.
"And you want me to walk into this one?" The light inside the arches flickered less now, but she could see what lay in it no better. "We know what this one does. It will bring you face to face with your greatest fears." Shiriam smiled pleasantly. "No one will ask you what you have faced. You need tell no more than you wish. Every woman's fears are her own property." Vaguely, Nynaeve thought about her nervousness concerning spiders, especially in the dark,
but she did not think that was what Shiryam meant. "I just walk through one arch and out another? 3 times through and it's done?" The Aes Sedai adjusted her shawl with an irritated hitch of her shoulder. "If you wish to boil it down that far, yes," she said dryly. "I told you on the way here what you must know about the ceremony as much as anyone is allowed to know beforehand. If you were a novice come to this, you would know it by heart. But don't worry about making mistakes. I will remind you if necessary. Are you sure you are ready to face it? If you want to stop now, I can still write your name in the novice book." "No." "Very well, then. 2 things I will tell you now that no woman hears until she is in this room. The first is this. Once you begin, you must continue to the end. Refuse to go on, and no matter your potential, you will be very kindly put out of the tower with enough silver to support you for 1 year, and you will never be allowed back." Nynaeve opened her mouth to say she would not refuse, but Shiryam cut her off with a sharp gesture. "Listen, and speak when you know what to say. 2nd, to seek, to strive, is to know danger. You will know danger here. Some women have entered and never come out. When the Turangrial was allowed to grow quiet, they were not there, and they were never seen again. If you will survive, you must be steadfast. Falter, fail, and..." Her silence was more eloquent than any words. "This is your last chance, child. You may turn back now, right now, and I will put your name in the novice book, and you will have only 1 mark against you. 2 times more you will be allowed to come here, and only at the 3rd refusal will you be put out of the tower. It is no shame to refuse. Many do. I myself could not do it my 1st time here. Now you may speak." Nynaeve gave the silver arches a sidelong look. The light in them no longer flickered. They were filled with a soft white glow. To learn what she wanted to learn, she needed the freedom of the accepted to question, to study on her own, with no more guidance than she asked for. "I must make Moiraine pay for what she has done to us. I must. I am ready." Shiryam started slowly into the chamber. Nynaeve went beside her. As if that were a signal, the Red Sister spoke in loud, formal tones. "Whom do you bring with you, sister?" The 3 Aes Sedai around the Turangrial continued their attentions to it. "One who comes as a candidate for acceptance, sister," Shiryam replied just as formally. "Is she ready?" "She is ready to leave behind what she was, and passing through her fears, gain acceptance. Does she know her fears? She has never faced them, but now is willing. Then let her face what she fears." Shiryam stopped, 2 spans from the arches, and Nynaeve stopped with her. "Your dress," Shiryam whispered, not looking at her. Nynaeve's cheeks colored at forgetting already what Shiryam had told her on the way down from her room. Hastily she removed her clothes, her shoes, and stockings. For a moment she could almost forget the arches in folding her garments and putting them neatly to 1 side. She tucked Lan's ring carefully under her dress. She did not want anyone staring at that. Then she was done, and the Turangrial was still there, still waiting. The stone felt cold under her bare feet, and she broke out all over in goosebumps, but she stood straight and breathed slowly. She would not let any of them see she was afraid. "The 1st time, Shiryam said, "is for what was. The way back will come but once. Be steadfast." Nynaeve hesitated. Then she stepped forward, through the arch and into the glow. It surrounded her as if the air itself were shining, as if she were drowning in light. The light was everywhere. The light was everything. Nynaeve gave a start when she realized she was naked, then stared in amazement. A stone wall stood to either side of her, 2 times as tall as she was and smooth, as if carved. Her toes wriggled on dusty, uneven stone paving. The sky above seemed flat and leaden, for all the lack of clouds, and the sun hung overhead swollen and red. In both directions were openings in the wall, gateways marked by short, square columns. The walls narrowed her field of view, but the ground sloped down from where she stood, both in front and behind. Through the gateways she could see more thick walls and passages between. She was in a gigantic maze. "Where is this? How did I come here?" Like a different voice, another thought came. "The way out will come but once." She shook her head. "If there's only one way out, I'll not find it standing here." At least the air was warm and dry. "I hope I find some clothes before I find people," she muttered. Dimly, she remembered playing mazes on paper as a child. There had been a trick to finding your way out, but she could not bring it to mind. Everything in the past seemed vague, as if it had happened to someone else. Trailing a hand along the wall, she started out, dust rising in puffs beneath her bare feet. At the first opening in the wall, she found herself peering down another passage that seemed indistinguishable from the one she was in already. Taking a deep breath, she went on straight, through more passages that all looked exactly alike. Presently, she came to something different. The way forked. She took the left turning, and eventually it forked again. Once more, she went left. At the third fork, left brought her to a blank wall. Grimly, she walked back to the last fork and went right. This time it took four turnings right to bring her to a dead end. For a moment she stood glaring at it. "How did I get here?" she demanded loudly. "Where is this place?" "The way out will come but once." Once more she turned back. She was sure there had to be a trick to the maze. At the last fork she went left, then right at the next. Determined, she kept on. Left, then right. Straight until she came to a fork. Left, then right. It seemed to her to be working. At least she had gone past a dozen forkings this time without finding an end. She came to another. Out of the corner of her eye, she caught a flicker of motion. When she turned to look, there was only the dusty passage between smooth stone walls. She started to take the left fork and spun around at another glimpse of movement. There was nothing there, but this time she was sure. There had been someone behind her. Was someone. She broke into a nervous trot in the opposite direction. Again and again, now, just at the edge of vision down this side passage or that, she saw something move, too quick to make out, gone before she could turn her head to see it plainly. She broke into a run. Few boys had been able to outrun her when she was a girl in the Two Rivers. The Two Rivers? What is that? A man stepped out from an opening ahead of her. His dark clothes had a musty, half-rotted look, and he was old, older than old. Skin like crazed parchment covered his skull too tightly, as if there were no flesh beneath. Wispy tufts of brittle hair covered a scabbed scalp, and his eyes were so sunken they seemed to peer out of two caves. She skidded to a stop, the uneven paving stones rough under her feet. "I am Aginor," he said, smiling, "and I have come for you." Her heart tried to leap out of her chest. One of the Forsaken. No. No, it cannot be. "You are a pretty one, girl. I will enjoy you." Suddenly, Nynaeve remembered she wore not a stitch. With a yelp and a face red only partly from anger, she darted away down the nearest crossing passage. Cackling laughter pursued her, and the sound of a shuffling run that seemed to match her best speed, and breathy promises of what he would do when he caught her, promises that curdled her stomach, even only half heard. Desperately, she searched for a way out, peering frantically as she ran with fists clenched. "The way out will come but once. Be steadfast." There was nothing, only more of the endless maze. As hard as she could run, his filthy words came always right behind her. Slowly, fear turned completely to anger. "Burn him," she sobbed. "The light, burn him. He has no right." Within her, she felt a flowering, an opening up, an unfolding to light. Teeth bared, she turned to face her pursuer just as Aginor appeared, laughing in a lurching gallop. "You have no right!" She flung her fist toward him, fingers opening as if she were throwing something. She was only half surprised to see a ball of fire leave her hand. It exploded against Aginor's chest, knocking him to the ground. For only an instant he sprawled there, then rose, staggering. He seemed unaware of the smoldering front of his coat. "You dare! You dare!" He quivered, and spittle leaked down his chin. Abruptly there were clouds in the sky, threatening billows of gray and black. Lightning leaped from the clouds straight for Nynaeve's heart. It seemed to her, just for a heartbeat, as if time had suddenly slowed, as though that heartbeat took forever. She felt the flow inside her. Saidar, came a distant thought, felt the answering flow in the lightning, and she altered the direction of the flow. Time leaped forward. With a crash, the bolt shattered stone above Aginor's head. The Forsaken's sunken eyes widened, and he tottered back.
You cannot! It cannot be!
He leaped away as lightning struck where he had stood, stone erupting in a fountain of shards. Grimly, Nynaeve started toward him, and Aginor fled. Saidar was a torrent racing through her. She could feel the rocks around her and the air, feel the tiny flowing bits of the one power that suffused them and made them. And she could feel Aginor doing something as well. Dimly she felt it, and far distant, as if it were something she could never truly know, but around her she saw the effects and knew them for what they were. The ground rumbled and heaved under her feet. Walls toppled in front of her, piles of stone to block her way. She scrambled over them, uncaring if sharp rock cut hands and feet, always keeping Aginor in sight. A wind rose, howling down the passages against her, raging till it flattened her cheeks and made her eyes water, trying to knock her down. She changed the flow, and Aginor tumbled along the passageway like an uprooted bush. She touched the flow in the ground, redirected it, and stone walls collapsed around Aginor, sealing him in. Lightning fell with her glare striking around him, stone exploding ever closer and closer. She could feel him fighting to push it back at her, but foot by foot the dazzling bolts moved toward the Forsaken. Something gleamed off to her right, something uncovered by the collapsing walls. Nynaeve could feel Aginor weakening, feel his efforts to strike at her grow more feeble and more frantic. Yet somehow she knew he had not given up. If she let him go now, he would chase after her as strongly as before, convinced she was too weak to defeat him after all, too weak to stop him from doing with her as he wished. A silver arch stood where stone had been, an arch filled with soft silver radiance. The way back. She knew when the Forsaken abandoned his attack, the moment when all his efforts were given over to staving her off. And his power was not enough. He could no longer deflect her blows. Now he had to fling himself away from the leaping gouts of stone thrown up by her lightning, the explosions flinging him down again. The way back will come but once. Be steadfast. The lightning no longer fell. Nynaeve turned from the scrabbling Aginor to look at the arch. She looked back at Aginor, just in time to see him crawl out of sight over the mounded stone and disappear. She hissed in frustration. Much of the maze still stood, and 100 new places to hide in the rubble she and the Forsaken had made. It would take time to find him again, but she was sure if she did not find him first, he would find her. In his full strength, he would come on her when she least expected him. The way back will come but once. Frightened, she looked again and was relieved to see the arch still there. If she could find Aginor quickly, be steadfast. With a cry of thwarted anger, she climbed over the tumbled stone toward the arch. Whoever's responsible for me being here, she muttered. I'll make them wish they had gotten what Aginor got. She stepped into the arch, and the light overwhelmed her. Nynaeve stepped out of the arch and stopped to stare. It was all as she remembered, the silver Tarangrial, the Aes Sedai, the chamber, but remembering was like a blow, absent memories crashing back into her head. She had come out of the same arch by which she went in. The Red Sister raised one of the silver chalices high and poured a stream of cool, clear water over Nynaeve's head.
You are washed clean of what sin you may have done, the Aes Sedai intoned, and of those done against you. You are washed clean of what crime you may have committed, and of those committed against you. You come to us washed clean and pure, in heart and soul.
Nynaeve shivered as the water ran down her body, dripping on the floor. Shiriam took her arm with a relieved smile, but the mistress of novices' voice gave no hint of past worry.
You do well so far. Coming back is doing well. Remember what your purpose is, and you will continue to be well.
The redhead began to lead her around the Terangrial to another arch.
It was so real, Nynaeve said in a whisper. She could remember everything, remember channeling the one power as easily as lifting her hand. She could remember Aginor and the things the Forsaken wanted to do to her. She shivered again.
Was it real?
No one knows, Shiriam replied. It seems real in memory, and some have come out bearing the actual wounds of hurts taken inside. Others have been cut to the bone inside and come back without a mark. It is all of it different every time for every woman who goes in. The ancients said there were many worlds. Perhaps this Terangrial takes you to them. Yet, if so, it does so under very stringent rules for something meant just to take you from one place to another. I believe it is not real. But remember, whether what happens is real or not, the danger is as real as a knife plunging into your heart.
I channeled the power. It was so easy.
Shiriam missed a step.
That isn't supposed to be possible. You should not even remember being able to channel.
She studied Nynaeve.
And yet you are not harmed. I can still sense the ability in you, as strong as it ever was.
You sound as if it were dangerous, Nynaeve said slowly,
and Shiriam hesitated before answering.
It isn't thought necessary to give a warning, since you shouldn't be able to remember it, but
this Terangrial was found during the Trolloc Wars. We have the records of its examination in the archives. The first sister to enter was warded as strongly as she could be, since no one knew what it would do. She kept her memories, and she channeled the one power when she was threatened, and she came out with her abilities burned to nothing, unable to channel, unable even to sense the true source. The second to go in was also warded, and she too was destroyed in the same way. The third went unprotected, remembered nothing once she was inside, and returned unharmed. That is one reason why we send you completely unprotected.
Nynaeve, you must not channel inside the Terangrial again. I know it is hard to remember anything, but try.
Nynaeve swallowed. She could remember everything, could remember not remembering.
I won't channel, she said.
If I can remember not to. She wanted to laugh hysterically.
They had reached the next arch. The glow still filled them all.
Shiriam gave Nynaeve a last warning look and left her standing alone.
The second time is for what is. The way back will come but once. Be steadfast.
Nynaeve stared at the shining silver arch.
What is in there this time?
The others were waiting, watching. She stepped firmly through into the light. Nynaeve stared down at the plain brown dress she wore with surprise, then gave a start. Why was she staring at her own dress?
The way back will come but once.
Looking around her, she smiled. She stood on the edge of the green in Emmons Field, with thatch-roofed houses all around and the Winespring Inn right in front of her. The Winespring itself rose in a gush from the stone outcrop thrusting up through the grass of the green, and the Winespring water rushed off east under the willows beside the inn. The streets were empty, but most people would be at their chores this time of the morning. Looking at the inn, her smile faded. There was more than an air of neglect about it. A whitewash faded, a shutter hanging loose, the rotted end of a rafter showing at a gap in the roof tiles. What's gotten into Bran? Is he spending so much time being mayor he's forgetting to take care of his inn? The inn door swung open, and Senbui came out, stopping dead when he saw her. The old thatcher was as gnarled as an oak root, and the look he gave her was just as friendly.
So you've come back, have you? Well, you might as well be off again.
She frowned as he spat at her feet and hurried on past her. Sen was never a pleasant man, but he was seldom openly rude. Never to her, at least. Never to her face. Following him with her eye, she saw signs of neglect all through the village. Thatch that should have been mended. Weeds filling yards. The door on Mistress Alcar's house hung aslant on a broken hinge. Shaking her head, Nynaeve pushed into the inn. I'll have more than one word with Bran about this. The common room was empty except for a lone woman, her thick graying braid pulled over her shoulder. She was wiping a table, but from the way she stared at the tabletop, Nynaeve did not think she was aware of what she was doing. The room seemed dusty. Marin? Marin Alvear jumped, one hand clutching her throat, and stared. She looked years older than Nynaeve remembered, worn.
Nynaeve? Nynaeve! Oh, it is you. Egwene? Have you brought Egwene back? Say you have.
Nynaeve put a hand to her head. Where is Egwene? It seemed she should be able to remember.
No. No, I haven't brought her back.
The way back will come but once. Mistress Alvear sagged into one of the straight-backed chairs.
I was so hoping, ever since Bran died. Bran is dead?
Nynaeve could not imagine it. That broad, smiling man had always seemed as if he would go on forever.
I should have been here.
The other woman jumped to her feet and hurried to peer anxiously through a window at the green and the village.
If Malaena knows you're here, there will be trouble. I just know Sen went scurrying off to find her. He's the mayor now.
Sen? How did even those wool-headed men choose Sen?
It was Malaena. She had the whole women's circle after their husbands for him.
Marin pressed her face almost against the window, trying to look every way at once.
Silly men, don't talk about whose name they're putting in the box beforehand. I suppose every man who voted for Sen thought he was the only one whose wife had badged him into it. Thought one vote would make no difference. Well, they learned better. We all did.
Who is this Malaena who has the women's circle doing her bidding?
I've never heard of her.
She's from Watch Hill. She's the wiz...
Marin turned from the window, wringing her hands.
Malaena Aelar's the wisdom, Nynaeve. When you didn't come back. Light, I hope she doesn't find out you're here.
Nynaeve shook her head in wonder.
Marin, you're afraid of her. You are shaking. What kind of woman is she? Why did the women's circle ever choose someone like her?
Mistress Alvear gave a bitter laugh.
We must have been mad. Malaena came down to see Mavra Mallon the day before Mavra had to go back to Devon Ride, and that night some children took sick, and Malaena stayed to look after them, and then the sheep started dying, and Malaena took care of that, too. It just seemed natural to choose her, but... She's a bully, Nynaeve. She browbeats you into doing what she wants. She keeps at you until you're too tired to say no anymore, and worse, she knocked Alspeth Luhan down.
A picture flashed in Nynaeve's head of Alspeth Luhan and her husband, Harald the blacksmith. She was nearly as tall as him and stoutly built, though handsome.
Alspeth's almost as strong as Harald. I can't believe. Malaena's not a big woman, but she's fierce, Nynaeve. She beat Alspeth all around the green with a stick, and none of us who saw had the nerve to try to stop it. When they found out, Bran and Harald said she had to go, even if they were interfering in women's circle business. I think some of the circle might have listened, but Bran and Harald both took sick the same night and died within a day of each other.
Marin bit her lip and looked around the room as if she thought someone might be hiding there. Her voice lowered.
Malaena mixed medicine for them. She said it was her duty, even if they had spoken against her. I saw gray fennel in what she took away with her.
Nynaeve gasped.
But are you sure, Marin? Are you certain?
The other woman nodded, her face wrinkling on the point of tears.
Marin, if you even suspected this woman might have poisoned Bran, how could you not go to the circle? She said Bran and Harald didn't walk in the light, Marin mumbled, talking against the wisdom the way they did. She said that was why they died. The light abandoned them. She talks about Sin all the time. She said Pete Alcar Sin, talking against her after Bran and Harald died. All he said was she didn't have the way with healing you did, but she drew the dragon's fang on his door, right out where everyone could see her with the charcoal in her hand. Both his boys were dead before the week was out, just dead when their mother went to wake them. Poor Neela. We found her wandering, laughing and crying all at the same time, screaming that Pete was the Dark One and he'd killed her boys. Pete hung himself the next day.
She shuddered and her voice went so soft Nynaeve could barely hear it.
I have four daughters still living under my roof. living, Nynaeve. Do you understand what I'm saying? They're still alive, and I want to keep them alive.
Nynaeve felt cold to her bones.
Maren, you can't allow this.
The way back will come but once. Be steadfast. She pushed it away.
If the women's circle stands together, you can be rid of her.
Stand together against Malaena? Maren's laugh was nearer a sob.
We're all afraid of her, but she's good with the children. There are always children sick these days, it seems, but Malaena does the best she can. Almost no one ever died of sickness when you were wisdom.
Maren, listen to me. Don't you see why there are always children sick? If she can't make you afraid of her, she makes you think you need her for the children. She's doing it, Maren, just as she did it to Bran.
She couldn't, Maren breathed. She wouldn't. Not the little ones.
She is, Maren.
The way back.
Nynaeve suppressed the thought ruthlessly.
Is there anyone in the circle who isn't afraid? Anyone who will listen?
The other woman said,
no one who isn't afraid. But Corin Aiellyn might listen. If she does, she might bring two or three more. Nynaeve, if enough of the circle listens, will you be our wisdom again? I think you may be the only one who won't back down to Malaena, even if we all know. You don't know what she's like.
I will. The way back.
No, these are my people. Get your cloak and we'll go to Corin.
Maren was hesitant about leaving the inn, and once Nynaeve had her outside, she slunk along from doorstep to doorstep, crouching and watching. Before they were halfway to Corin Aiellyn's house, Nynaeve saw a tall, scrawny woman striding down the other side of the green toward the inn, slashing the heads off weeds with a thick willow switch. Bony as she was, she had a look of wiry strength and a set, determined slash of a mouth. Sen Bui scuttled along in her wake.
Malaena!
Maren pulled Nynaeve into the space between two houses and whispered as if afraid the woman might hear across the green.
I knew Sen would go to her.
Something made Nynaeve look over her shoulder. Behind her stood a silver arch, reaching from house to house, glowing whitely.
The way back will come but once. Be steadfast.
Maren gave a soft scream.
She's seen us! Light, help us! She's coming this way!
The tall woman had turned across the green, leaving Sen standing uncertainly. There was no uncertainty on Malaena's face. She walked slowly, as if there were no hope of escape, a cruel smile growing with every step. Maren tugged at Nynaeve's sleeve.
We have to run! We have to hide! Nynaeve, come on! Sen will have told her who you are! She hates anyone even to speak of you!
The silver arch pulled Nynaeve's eyes.
The way back.
She shook her head, trying to remember.
It is not real.
She looked at Maren. Stark terror twisted the woman's face.
You must be steadfast to survive. Please, Nynaeve. She's seen me with you. She has seen me. Please, Nynaeve.
Malaena came closer, implacable.
My people.
The arch shone.
The way back.
It is not real. With a sob, Nynaeve tore her arm out of Maren's grasp and plunged toward the silvery glow. Maren's shriek hounded her.
For the love of the light, Nynaeve, help me! Help me!
The glow enveloped her. Staring, Nynaeve staggered out of the arch, barely aware of the chamber or the Aes Sedai. Maren's last cry still rang in her ears. She did not flinch when cold water was suddenly poured over her head.
You are washed clean of false pride. You are washed clean of false ambition. You come to us washed clean in heart and soul.
As the red Aes Sedai stepped back, Shiriam came to take Nynaeve's arm. Nynaeve gave a start, then realized who it was. She seized the collar of Shiriam's dress in both hands.
Tell me it was not real. Tell me.
Bad? Shiriam pried her hands loose as if she were used to this reaction.
It is always worse, and the third is the worst of all. I left my friend. I left my people in the pit of doom to come back. Please, Light, it was not real. I didn't really. I have to make Moiraine pay. I have to.
There is always some reason not to return. Something to prevent you or distract you. This Terangreal weaves traps for you from your own mind, weaves them tight and strong, harder than steel and more deadly than poison. That is why we use it as a test. You must want to be Aes Sedai more than anything else in the whole world, enough to face anything, fight free of anything to achieve it. The White Tower cannot accept less. We demand it of you.
You demand a great deal.
Nynaeve stared at the third arch as the red-haired Aes Sedai took her toward it.
The third is the worst.
I'm afraid, she whispered.
What could be worse than what I just did?
Good, Shiriam said. You seek to be Aes Sedai, to channel the one power. No one should approach that without fear and awe. Fear will keep you cautious. Caution will keep you alive.
She turned Nynaeve to face the arch, but she did not step back immediately.
No one will force you to enter a third time, child.
Nynaeve licked her lips.
If I refuse, you'll put me out of the tower and never let me come back.
Shiriam nodded.
And this is the worst. Shiriam nodded again. Nynaeve drew breath. I'm ready.
The third time, Shiriam intoned formally, is for what will be. The way back will come but once. Be steadfast. Nynaeve threw herself at the arch in a run. Laughing, she ran through swirling clouds of butterflies rising from wildflowers that covered the hilltop meadow with a knee-deep blanket of color. Her gray mare danced nervously, reins dangling at the edge of the meadow, and Nynaeve stopped running, so as not to frighten the animal more. Some of the butterflies settled on her dress, on flowers of embroidery and seed pearls, or flittered around the sapphires and moonstones in her hair, hanging loose about her shoulders. Below the hill, the necklace of the Thousand Lakes spread through the city of Malkir, reflecting the cloud-brushing seven towers, with golden crane banners flying at their heights in the mists. The city had a thousand gardens, but she preferred this wild garden on the hilltop.
The way back will come but once. Be steadfast.
The sound of hooves made her turn.
Al-Lan Mandragoran, king of Malkir, leaped from the back of his charger and strolled toward her through the butterflies, laughing. His face had the look of a hard man, but the smiles he wore for her softened the stony plains. She gaped at him, taken by surprise when he gathered her into his arms and kissed her. For a moment she clung to him, lost, kissing him back. Her feet dangled a foot in the air, and she did not care. Suddenly she pushed at him, pulled her face back.
No,
she pushed harder. Let me go. Put me down.
Puzzled, he lowered her until her feet touched ground. She backed away from him.
Not this, she said. I cannot face this. Anything but this. Please let me face Aginor again.
Memory swirled.
Aginor?
She did not know where that thought had come from. Memory lurched and tilted, shifting fragments like broken ice on a flooding river. She clawed for the pieces, clawed for something to hang on to.
Are you well, my love?
Lan asked worriedly.
Do not call me that. I am not your love. I cannot marry you.
He startled her by throwing back his head and roaring with laughter.
Your implication that we are not married might upset our children, wife. And how are you not my love? I have no other and will have no other.
I must go back.
Desperately, she looked for the arch, found only meadow and sky.
Harder than steel and more deadly than poison. Lan, Lan's babies. Light, help me. I must go back now.
Go back? Where? To Emmons Field? If you wish it, I'll send letters to Morghese and command an escort.
Alone, she muttered, still searching. Where is it? I have to go.
I won't be tangled up in this. I couldn't bear it. Not this. I have to go now. Tangled up in what, Nynaeve? What is it you couldn't bear? No, Nynaeve. You can ride alone here if you wish it, but if the Queen of the Malkyri came to Andor without a proper escort, Morghese would be scandalized if not offended. You don't want to offend her, do you? I thought you two were friends.
Nynaeve felt as if she'd been hit in the head, blow after dazing blow.
Queen, she said hesitantly. We have babies?
Are you certain you're well?
I think I had better take you to Sharina Sedai.
No,
she backed away from him again.
No, Aes Sedai.
It isn't real. I won't be pulled into it this time. I won't.
Very well, he said slowly.
As my wife, how could you not be queen? We are Malkyrie here, not Southlanders. You were crowned in the Seven Towers at the same time we exchanged rings. Unconsciously, he moved his left hand. A plain gold band encircled his forefinger. She glanced at her own hand, at the ring she knew would be there. She clasped her other hand over it, but whether to deny its presence by hiding it or to hold it, she could not have said.
Do you remember now? He went on.
He stretched out a hand as if to brush her cheek, and she went back another 6 steps. He sighed.
As you wish, my love.
We have 3 children, though only one can properly be called a baby. Marek is almost to your shoulder and can't decide if he likes horses or books better. Elnor has already begun practicing how to turn boys' heads when she is not pestering Sharina about when she'll be old enough to go to the White Tower.
Elnor was my mother's name, she said softly.
So you said when you chose it. Nynaeve, no! I will not be pulled into it this time. Not this. I won't. Beyond him, among the trees beside the meadow, she saw the silver arch. The trees had hidden it before. The way back will come but once. She turned toward it.
I must go.
He caught her hand, and it was as if her feet had become rooted in stone. She could not make herself pull away.
I do not know what is troubling you, wife. But whatever it is, tell me and I will make it right. I know I am not the best of husbands. I was all hard edges when I found you, but you've smoothed some of them away at least.
You are the very best of husbands, she murmured. To her horror, she found herself remembering him as her husband, remembering laughter and tears, bitter arguments and sweet making up. They were dim memories, but she could feel them growing stronger, warmer.
I cannot.
The arch stood there only a few steps away.
The way back will come but once. Be steadfast.
I do not know what is happening, Nynaeve, but I feel as if I were losing you. I could not bear that. He put a hand in her hair. Closing her eyes, she pressed her cheek against his fingers.
Stay with me always.
I want to stay, she said softly.
I want to stay with you.
When she opened her eyes, the arch was gone.
Come but once.
No! No! Lan turned her to face him.
What troubles you?
You must tell me if I'm to help.
This is not real.
Not real? Before I met you, I thought nothing except the sword was real. Look around you, Nynaeve. It is real. Whatever you want to be real, we can make real together, you and I. Wonderingly, she did look around. The meadow was still there. The 7 towers still stood over the 1,000 lakes. The arch was gone, but nothing else had changed.
I could stay here. With Lan. Nothing has changed.
Her thoughts turned. Nothing has changed. Egwene is alone in the White Tower. Rand will channel the power and go mad. And what of Matt and Perrin? Can they take back any shred of their lives? And Moiraine, who tore all our lives apart, still walks free.
I must go back, she whispered.
Unable to bear the pain on his face, she pulled free of him. Deliberately, she formed a flower bud in her mind, a white bud on a blackthorn branch. She made the thorns sharp and cruel, wishing they could pierce her flesh, feeling as if she already hung in the blackthorn's branches. Shiriam Sedai's voice danced just out of hearing, telling her it was dangerous to attempt to channel the power. The bud opened, and Saidar filled her with light.
Nynaeve, tell me what is the matter?
Lan's voice slid across her concentration. She refused to let herself hear it. There had to be a way back still. Staring at where the silver arch had been, she tried to find some trace of it. There was nothing.
Nynaeve!
She tried to picture the arch in her mind, to shape it and form it to the last detail, curve of gleaming metal filled with a glow like snowy fire. It seemed to waver there in front of her, first there between her and the trees, then not, then there.
I love you.
She drew at Sidar, drinking in the flow of the one power till she thought she would burst. The radiance filling her, shining around her, hurt her own eyes. The heat seemed to consume her. The flickering arch firmed, steadied, stood whole before her. Fire and pain seemed to fill her. Her bones felt as if they were burning. Her skull seemed a roaring furnace.
"With all my heart."
She ran toward the silver curve, not letting herself look back. She had been sure the bitterest thing she would ever hear was Marin Alvear's cry for help as Nynaeve abandoned her, but that was honey beside the sound of Lan's anguished voice pursuing her.
"Nynaeve, please don't leave me."
The white glow consumed her. Naked, Nynaeve staggered through the arch and fell to her knees, slack-mouthed and sobbing, tears streaming down her cheeks. Shiriam knelt beside her. She glared at the red-haired Aes Sedai.
"I hate you," she managed fiercely, gulping. "I hate all Aes Sedai."
Shiriam gave a small sigh, then pulled Nynaeve to her feet. "Child, almost every woman who does this says much the same thing. It is no small thing to be made to face your fears." "What is this?" she said sharply, turning Nynaeve's palms up. Nynaeve's hands quivered with a sudden pain she had not felt before. Driven through the palm of each hand, right in the center, was a long black thorn. Shiriam drew them out carefully. Nynaeve felt the cool healing of the Aes Sedai's touch. When each thorn came free, it left only a small scar on front and back of the hand. Shiriam frowned. There shouldn't be any scarring. "And how did you only get two, and both placed so precisely? If you tangled yourself in a blackthorn bush, you should be covered with scratches and thorns." "I should," Nynaeve agreed bitterly. "Maybe I thought I had already paid enough." "There is always a price," the Aes Sedai agreed. "Come now. You have paid the first price. Take what you have paid for." She gave Nynaeve a slight push forward. Nynaeve realized there were more Aes Sedai in the chamber. The Amyrlin in her striped stole was there, with a shawled sister from each Aja ranged to either side of her, all of them watching Nynaeve. Remembering Shiriam's instruction, Nynaeve tottered forward and knelt before the Amyrlin. It was she who held the last chalice, and she tipped it slowly over Nynaeve's head.
"You are washed clean of Nynaeve Almira from Emmons Field. You are washed clean of all ties that bind you to the world. You come to us washed clean in heart and soul. You are Nynaeve Almira, accepted of the White Tower."
Handing the chalice to one of the sisters, the Amyrlin drew Nynaeve to her feet.
"You are sealed to us now."
The Amyrlin's eyes seemed to hold a dark glow. Nynaeve's shiver had nothing to do with being naked and wet.